fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
The drum here today, you know, that's the heartbeat of our nations. And for some of you, it might have been new, but it speaks a lot for what we feel inside of our hearts. My message today will focus on establishing progressive collaboration. Government to government consultation. That's so important in this day and age when we're faced with economy that we all have to, Republican, Democrat, Independent, we all have to work towards some solutions. And to reaffirm that treaties between the tribes and the U.S. government are the foundation of our relationships. You know, the subject of Indian law is kind of an esoteric area, you know, and so it's hard to sometimes understand these relationships. But we're not your adversaries. We're a part of this great state of Wisconsin. So we can't be dismissed as a subgroup of people in Wisconsin.
Those are the words of Gordon Thayer, the chairman of the Lacouture Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, during the annual State of the Tribes address before a full session of the Wisconsin State Legislature. Thayer spoke out on Tuesday on many issues, spearfishing, hunting, mining, and drug abuse, and the service of Wisconsin's Indians in the armed forces and their contributions to the state's economic prosperity. Now, you heard his words, we are not adversaries, but he chastised the governor and state lawmakers for a failure of communication and collaboration with Wisconsin's Indian nations. I'm Glenn Mobrig, and today on Route 51, we focus on the sovereign nations that exist within Wisconsin's state borders, their culture, their concerns, and their impact on the economy, with our guests Mike Wiggins, Jr., chairman of the Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and Mick Isham, Lacouture Tribal Governing Board Secretary Treasurer and chairman of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, or GLIFWIC. Mike Wiggins has been outspoken in his opposition to a proposed iron mine in the Pinoki Hills south of Lake Superior, and Mick Isham has been named to the newly formed Great Lakes Advisory Board of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Now, as always, we invite you to join the conversation. Please give us a phone call at 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to be a part of it. That's 1-800-780-9742. And Mick Isham and Mike Wiggins joining us by telephone. Guys, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir.
Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa?
Well, yeah, we're situated almost as far north as you can get in Wisconsin on the shores of Lake Superior. You know, our reservation dovetails with Lake Superior, actually, and, you know, a relatively smaller tribe as far as our annual budget goes, and but still a contributor to the local economies in the sense that we're one of the largest employers, if not the largest employer in Ashland County, and definitely have an incredible land base and water resources that are people, you know, live their traditions and culture through, and you know, lands and waters where people are very connected and living a good life.
Well, speaking about the land and the waters, you've taken a strong stance against the proposed iron mine in the Pinoki Hills.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think. You know, if you look at the science behind how a watershed works, and then you factor in the obliteration of the headwaters to a watershed, anyone downstream is going to be severely impacted. And for us, downstream means home. And as a nation, you know, there's a recognition that a mine on a scale that was proposed in the Pinokis there would be catastrophic and really represent, you know, some very dangerous elements to our sustainability and our way of life. And so we're going to respond to that.
You know, Mike, like a lot of Native Americans, you take a very reverential stance toward the land and toward the water. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I think our elders put that forth the best, you know, in a lot of the ceremonies that we have. And it's real simple. It's that as human beings, we're pitiful. And when you really think about it, it's manifested in the truth that if Mother Nature went away, we would essentially die. If human beings all of a sudden went away off the face of the earth, Mother Nature would thrive. And I know that it's kind of it's simplistic, but it's a truth. And when you know, the Native American worldview and value kind of carry that understanding, those connections to our lands and waters, and having them around for our people into the future, and for all people into the future, is unbelievably critical.
Mick Isham, is this reverence for the land, is that something that's characteristic of Indian life across the United States, this belief that everything is sacred?
Yes, that's what I was thinking when Mike was talking. I mean, all the tribes are different. We have certain things in common. We even, you know, disagree, maybe even quarrel a little bit amongst ourselves sometimes over things. But when it comes to Mother Earth, I think, you know, I don't know of any tribe that doesn't hold that reverence for the Earth. And, you know, anyone who does any type of studying of religions, you know, I don't want to offend anyone, but if you look at religions, they're based on people's ways of life. And, you know, maybe Christianity comes from the days of the sheep herding religion. So you hear the Lord is my shepherd and terms like that. With the tribal nations, our ways of life were based on the natural resources and nature. And so our religion and spirituality and stuff comes right from that.
You're the chairman of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, or GLIFWIC, if you use the acronym. What is that and what do you do?
Well, Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, that was formed after the Lacouture versus Wisconsin case, sometimes referred to as the Voight case. The tribes won the recognition of our treaty rights back. And so the leaders at the time, the tribal leaders, they had some decisions to make. How are we going to implement our treaty rights in the 20th century context, you know, because there's non-Indians here and the use of the resources could be in jeopardy if all the user groups just went out and kind of had at it. And mm-hmm. So the tribal leaders at the time decided rather than each tribe, you know, Lacouture, Bad River, Flambeau, all the, we call them tribes now, but really together we're one tribe. And they decided that they were going to implement our treaty rights together as a nation, together rather than all separate codes and separate things. So with that in mind, the Great Lakes Indian Fishery Commission, and there was a what they called a Voight Intertribal Task Force, which was implementing the first seasons, they merged to form GLIFWIC. And now that what they call a Voight Task Force is a committee within the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. And so the GLIFWIC basically is the tail, so to speak. The tribes are the dog, and mm-hmm. the tribes make policies and all that. And we have our own warden force. We're not just the Indian DNR, like some kind of look at it, but we besides implementing the seasons, you know, doing the declarations on fish and deer and game, we also have an environmental wing that looks at the mercury in fish or contaminants,
mm-hmm.
and databases, anything. I always say they're the best natural resource agency in the country.
Well, you've been named to another one. You've been named to the newly formed Great Lakes Advisory Board of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. There are just 18 people on that body.
Yeah, that to me is a great, great honor. The tribes have, you know, a historic connection to the Great Lakes. And, you know, what I hope to bring to this board is the tribal perspective or the subsistence perspective. You know, a lot of times managers manage for a sport harvest, and you know, when it comes to things like contaminants, a sport harvester can probably get away with a little bit of contamination if they're just going to catch a few fish, release them, or put a couple on their wall. But when people subsist on them, any amount of contamination really is too much, because it's going to bioaccumulate in our bodies. And the tribes are a lot more susceptible to environmental contaminants than the general population, because we eat so much fish and game. So I hope that's the perspective I can bring to this board.
Well, since we're talking about spearfishing, and again, this organization that you're the chairman of, Glyphwick, sets the annual take, right, for walleye?
No, each tribe does their own declarations. Glyphwick will administer that on behalf of the tribe.
Okay. So they come to you, and then you kind of get all of the information together and make sure that it happens the way it's supposed to happen.
Well, correct.
The Ojibwe have announced plans to spear nearly 60,000 walleye across northern Wisconsin lakes this spring. That's 5,300 more than last year. And the DNR says that in response to that, they have to reduce the bag limits for walleye to only one fish on 197 lakes, two fish on 331 lakes, and three fish on seven lakes, instead of the standard daily limit of five walleyes. I want to talk about this with the two of you, but before we do that, let's listen to what Lacouture Chairman Gordon Thayer said on the topic in that State of the Tribes address on Tuesday.
I've read some inflammatory press clippings recently about our spring spearfishing declaration. It brought me back, actually, to the 80s, when tensions ran high from slanted comments in the press. I was chairman of Lacouture again, as I said, and back then, it brought me back to almost like flashbacks. I had numerous calls threatening me, making vulgar, derogatory remarks, the racial words that came out. I won't even repeat them here to show the hatred over that issue, the racist overtones. The Wisconsin DNR leadership must recognize it's not the 80s. Spearfishing and treaty-protected rights have ensured a safe harvest to all to enjoy. I say all to enjoy. It's a sad commentary when political propaganda appears in the press. Who wants to come to visit Wisconsin when slanted press releases are designed to raise tensions and provoke concern among sportsmen about our very own resources? It's time for this propaganda to stop, and true leadership through communication must begin. That's what leadership is.
That's Gordon Thayer, the chairman of the Lacouture Band of Chippewa, in the State of the Tribes address on Tuesday. Mick Isham, he accused the DNR of spreading propaganda and the media of inflammatory stories. He said it threatens to bring back the racial hatred and the tension of the 1980s. What's the basis for those comments?
Well, you know, I think that I've also read that press release, and I do believe that it does fan the flame up a little bit. There's really no reason to put out a press release, but if you read it, you'll see the in the beginning words like drastic, or you know, kind of to raise people's alarms. But then in the end of her press release, she says, "Yeah, but the tribes are within their legal limits, and there's no harm to the resource."
That's Kathy Stepp, the
right.
DNR secretary.
So if that's the case, why put out the press release? It did kind of catch me by surprise as well.
Are you worried that we could go back to those days in the 1980s with those angry white mobs meeting on the piers and the lake shores during the spearing season?
We're always worried about that, and we try very hard to do education, because to me, education is the key in regards to this. We just had our what we call our steering committee meeting today. it's the Inouye Steering Committee. This was born out of those protest days when they were saying we're going to deplete the resource. And Senator Inouye and some others came here on a fact-finding mission. We showed them the numbers, the real numbers, because we count and measure every single fish that we catch. And it clearly showed that the tribes take less than 10% of the total harvest, and that's only on some of the lakes. Really, there's so many other lakes that we don't even harvest from. I mean, right now, the state catches over 1 million walleyes, they estimate, because they don't know, really.
That's sport fishermen, correct?
Sport fishermen. I mean, they keep around 257,000 of them, and again, that's an estimate. Now, the tribes, on average, harvest about 26,000 walleyes. So, I mean, in comparison, it's not even close.
Do you think the DNR had to put those one-bag limits on all those lakes?
Well, I don't believe that they do. We put forth a proposal. We call it 85-3, meaning tribes can declare up to 80% of, or 85% of our the safe harvest, and they can still get their three-bag limit. If anyone wants to know more about that, they can call Glyphwick, main office, and talk to the biologist there. We got, since we've been harvesting again, spearing again after the court case, we now have loads and loads of data. When we had the court case in the 70s and 80s there was all these mobs putting all this fear out there, and we didn't have the data. So they put a bunch of safety factors on just to make sure. Well, now after all these years, we have the data, and we probably have better data on the lakes now than ever before.
So you're saying the DNR, given this new data, probably doesn't have to lower the bag limits so far on so many lakes.
That's what I am saying. It's just the court case spells out how we have to do our declarations, and there's nowhere in the ruling that says they have to reduce anybody's their take or on the state side there to on their bag limits.
Mike Wiggins, I'd like you to weigh in on this. There's been a lot of tension on a number of fronts with some lawmakers in the state. We've got the Wolf Hunt, we've got the Pinocchi Hills Mine, and now the reaction, I guess, to the annual spearfishing take. Are you worried that we could go back to those days in the 1980s with those angry white mobs? Is the animosity something we've got to worry about now?
Well, I think to answer that, no, I'm not worried. There's 25 years of history, and I think people in northern Wisconsin recognize that our lakes are vibrant and healthy. I think for hardcore fishermen, no matter what race they happen to be, they understand that there has been cooperative management strategies that have repaired and helped nurse different lakes back to health in terms of their ability to produce walleye and other fish. There's a track record there between the tribes and the state historically that speaks for itself, and the fact is people are catching fish.
I'll tell you what I read in the newspaper. Why put the spearing numbers so high? Some of these political writers say that you did it just to get even with the Republican legislature and the governor for pushing through the mining bill and the Wolf Hunt without getting input from the tribes. Is that unfair?
There's a non-story there, Glenn. That's what Chairman Thayer was kind of getting at. When you approach this from the construct of the management mechanisms that are in place between the state and the tribes, and from a science-based perspective, this isn't a drastic declaration. In fact, it ain't even one of the highest declarations that we've had. We didn't hear about it in the past because DNR leadership chose to recognize it as being exactly what it is within the legal bounds of the management practices and the law.
And
different activities says a lot about how the general public are going to feel, no doubt. Because
and Mike, on your Facebook page, you mentioned something that I didn't see from those political writers, the fact that the tribes do aggressive restocking through the tribal fish hatcheries. According to your Facebook page, almost 44.5 million fish in various stages of life were restocked in 2012.
Absolutely. In Bad River alone, we put 2,400,000 walleye fry back into the Squamagon Bay ecosystem. We put 391,255 fingerlings back into the Caucagan, Bad River, Lake Superior ecosystem. We put 58,800 perch back into the system. And I have heard from many non-tribal members up in our neck of the woods around the Big Lake that the perch have come back, and you can almost correlate that to when our hatchery started stepping it up in the perch hatchery effort. We're doing our best. Our grand total last year for putting fish in various stages of life back into the ecosystems around us was 2.8 million plus. When you look at Grand Portage, Keweenaw Bay, LCO, Flambeau, Lac du Désert, Leech Lake, Menominee, Mole Lake, Red Cliff, Red Lake, St. Croix, White Earth, Sault Ste. Marie, we're over 44.5 million, and that stuff, you know, goes unnoticed. In the meantime, too, tribes are fighting exotic invasives and, you know, hybrid cattail, purple blue strife, carp that are detrimental to aquatics and fisheries, and there's a tremendous effort out there to try and pass it on, and how we kind of encapsulate different issues. Mm-hmm. And different things between us is very important, because as leaders we have to set the tone. And what really came out of the spearfishing declarations was the fact that it was a non-story, and the DNR leadership chose to fan some flames and try and make something out of that. Big picture, I don't know if that's part of the whole notion of divide and conquer. You know, turning people against each other on the basis of race. Or racism means that everyone ends up flying shallow, and no one's looking at the true facts, the true deeper understandings and facts that are there to illuminate the different issues between us, because we're stuck at that superficial skin level, and that's a danger to everybody.
And Mick Isham, I know the restocking is something that you're very enthusiastic about. It's one of your big concerns.
Yeah, Mike touched on it there, and we basically stock every single lake that we harvest from, with the exception of the natural reproducing lakes. But I was kind of squirming here before wanting to jump in, because the notion that we're going to kill something because we're mad at the state for whatever those reasons, the mine or wolves or whatever, that's just not the way Indian people are taught. I could just imagine what my grandma would say, our elders would say, you know, if we were going to go out and kill fish or whatever because we were mad at the state or mad at any group. And that's just not the way we are.
Mick Isham, he is with the Lac-Qui-Duré Tribe. He's also the chairman of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, or GLIFWIC. We've also got the chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, Mike Wiggins. We'd like to hear from you, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back to talk about mining right after this.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
Well, we've got a mess outside tonight. Freezing drizzle, changing to light snow, up to 2 inches, a low of 26. Friday, another inch or two of light snow mixed with rain, a high of 36, a low of 22. Saturday, cloudy, a chance of sprinkles and flurries, a high of 38, a low of 22. Sunday, light snow, changing to light rain, a high of 42, a low of 34. We've got a mix falling right now of rain, freezing rain, and light snow. across much of northern Wisconsin. Cloudy skies elsewhere. Highest temperatures, 36 in Woodruff and Phillips, 34 in Wapaka, 33 in Rhinelander and Wautoma. Lowest, 28 in Antigo, 30 in Mosinee, Marshfield, and Stevens Point. We've got 31 degrees outside our studios in Wausau. Please drive safely. We've also got Mick Isham, who is the chairman of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. He's with the Lacoutere Tribe. And Mike Wiggins, Jr. of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. And let's go to the phones. We'll go to Jerry in McNaughton. Jerry, you're on Route 51 with Mick and Mike.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
My question is, by all means, they were granted that right, and I support that till the day I die. But I worked out in the Lac-Mou-Flambeau Reservation, building homes for 20 years during the 80s and 2000s, and it was not very uncommon to have dozens of wallets rotting in the back of people's trunks, only because they were able to spear them back in the day with succession, and now it's not needed. And I'm not an Indian, so I don't know why they do that. But it was such a waste that a gentleman say that his parents and grandparents would be sad. Those people, I'm sure, are very sad.
All right. Jerry, you've got a really bad cell phone connection here. I'm going to let our guests respond. Why don't we start with Mick?
Yeah, I didn't get that all. It seemed as though...
He said what I made out was that the killing during the 80s was deliberate, and that there were fish rotting on the shore.
Well, you know, we have our enforcement division, and we also, you know, we have our codes and ordinances, and just like the state would, if anybody's caught wasting natural resources, they end up in our court system as well. And I would think that the shame alone is worse more than any fine that could ever happen around, at least around here. And it's not that we've never had any citations like that, because we have. And but we have a warden force that will handle it, and a court system.
Mike Wiggins, did you see fish rotting on the shore during the spearfishing in the 80s?
No, I never have. If that gentleman did see that, I would tell him that the tribal harvesters and the people within our tribal communities would be just as disgusted and revolted by, you know, the individual or individuals who are responsible for something like that. Anywhere you go, there's stories of poaching. I used to be a Glyphwick game warden, and there are some who abuse our natural resources. You know, that has nothing to do with tribal or non-tribal. It's just individuals that, aren't respecting the way they should be.
And I want to mention that we do have a link to the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa on our Route 51 Facebook page, and also a link to Glyphwick, the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, if you want to find out more. Well, let's turn to mining, gentlemen. The Bad River Band has been outspoken in its opposition to that proposed massive iron mine in the Pinoakie Hills south of Lake Superior. Tuesday in Madison, Chairman Thayer said all 11 of Wisconsin tribes were behind you. Let's listen to that portion of his remarks.
Another contentious issue between the tribes and the state is this recent legislation on environmental regulations and permitting a process for mines. Much has been said on both sides of this important issue, but none has involved open and honest dialogue between the tribes and the state. A lesson to be learned from this is that better consultation between the state and the tribes is needed. We really need to do that. Make no mistake, the 11 tribes of Wisconsin opposed the proposed mine in its permitting process. And we stand unified. I say unified with our relatives at Bad River Reservation in protecting the waters. Mike, we stand behind you and your people. We cannot cash in our natural resources for corporate profit. nor for temporary job creation. It's not to be traded, our natural uses, like some asset or commodity. We as tribal people of Wisconsin share the perspective of Chief Seattle, one of our profound elders in Indian country, as he spoke in his speech of 1854. Every part of this earth is sacred to my people. Every hillside, every valley, every clearing and wood is holy in the memory and experience of my people. Even those unspeaking stones along the shore are loud with events and memories in the life of my people. This was back in 1854. I guess the common theme in some of this is the breakdown of communication, a disregard to seek advice from all our affected parties. So I ask this distinguished body to consider this offer. When it comes time to make a difficult decision on resources and policies that impact us both, that we agree to meet. Sometimes we never agree, but we should never let outsiders make our laws for us.
Gordon Thayer in the State of the Tribes address on Tuesday saying we shouldn't let outsiders write our laws, a clear reference to the influence of the mining company Gagebic Taconite in helping to craft the language in the new mining law, Mick Isham.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was, a clear inference to that. I've seen this before, and that was in Ladysmith. This is the mine that they always point to as this perfect model of mining, and it didn't pollute and it created all these jobs, but I was pretty involved in that process. My son and his family are from Ladysmith, and in the beginning they were all for that mine because jobs. They said the same thing, jobs, and they wouldn't pollute and they'll be there so long. Well, none of it panned out. None of them got jobs. They brought people in from Michigan and Minnesota to take those jobs. They were there about half the time they said they were going to be there. And today, still, it's putting out copper into the river and polluting the fish and the water.
Well, Governor Walker, when he signed the mining bill at a mining manufacturing company in Rhinelander, insisted that the mine could operate safely and cleanly. It would not damage the environment. And it would provide thousands of jobs, not just for the miners, but for the people who make the equipment. I mean, don't we have that miner on our state flag?
I think that was fantasy, really. It's not based in anything scientific. It's definitely not based in an objective economic analysis that looked at the true costs and impacts of the obliteration of watersheds and impacts to, the tourism economy. I think that was propaganda, and I received it that way.
Assembly Speaker Pro Tem Bill Cramer, he's a Republican from Waukesha, he walked out of the room over Gordon Thayer's remarks. He said later that, Mike Wiggins, Republicans had tried to meet with you and other Chippewa leaders over the mine, but you refused because of your strong opposition to the mine. Was that true, that you refused to meet with them?
I never seen the state government reach out to the tribal nations for consultation on a government-to-government level. If there was a lot of discussion and education that we tried to do to some of the new legislators in regard to treaties and sovereign status, and the recognition that this mining initiative represents the destruction of habitat. Habitat that's critical to the foundation of usufructuary rights in treaties with the United States government, and as a result, merit government-to-government consultation. What we would get would amount to essentially a letter to come and talk to an individual legislator or two, and that would, from my understanding, that was sent just the Bad River, when really, when you look at ceded territory and treaty rights, it was applicable to all the Anishinaabe tribes up in the northern part of the, the state. And no matter how much we tried to discuss those types of realities, it never seemed to pan out. So,
Mike, you're worried about the water quality in the Bad River, and you're also worried about the wild rice beds. Is that correct?
Yeah, the wild rice beds because of sulfate contamination. Worried about the health and welfare of our people because of sulfuric acid mine drainage and the air quality issues that are associated with the with essentially exploding a mountain and crushing it into talcum powder. There's a lot of really complex dynamics when you get into the science of the mining impacts. And really what it looked like to me, with the help of the mining company, you know, authoring the mining bill, we had decision makers choosing to fly at, you know, 500,000 feet and not really get into the detail of what was going to be the reality for those of us downwind and downstream.
They say that the reality is that any mine has got to be approved by the EPA. It's got to be approved by the DNR. So you've already got those safety checks in place.
Well, you know, anytime you look at any department or entity, whether it be state or federal, there's this whole realm of administrative capacity. And administrative capacity is essentially having the boots on the ground to illuminate and verify and ultimately make safe for the public the different types of projects that are being examined. What's happening right now is the DNR is probably under-equipped to even begin to handle the permitting process on the scale of what GTAC's proposing. Additionally, at the federal level, you know, the EPA isn't exactly the most well-funded, well-accepted department, you know, from a congressional standpoint. There's a recognition that, you know, environmental rules, regulations that protect the waters and the health and welfare of people are very cumbersome and very frustrating for corporations to try and profit when they have to obliterate the environment. And that's a fact. And what we saw in the state of Wisconsin through the mining bill was the greasing of the skids for a mining company to profit on the environment. And
Mike,
really,
Mike,
all we have left are some of the federal processes that might put a little integrity into everything.
Well, let's talk about those federal processes. Will you be able to block that mine in federal court because of your special status as a sovereign nation within Wisconsin's borders?
Well, we have, you know, we have delegated authority through our water quality standards and under the Clean Water Act, working with the Army Corps of Engineers and EPA. We'll also have our air quality standards in place, and those will definitely be a couple of layers to really vet a mining project through. I think.
Do you have special protections though because of this whole business of being a sovereign nation, right?
Well, I really dislike the word special. You know, really.
I didn't mean to offend you.
It's okay.
What if I said extraordinary? You know, extraordinary or you know, and a lot of people who are not Indians have trouble grasping this whole concept of a sovereign nation existing within Wisconsin's borders, but that's what you are, and it does give you special rights and privileges, or extraordinary rights or privileges,
well,
whatever you want to call it, right?
I think that's a little backwards. I think Wisconsin is within our borders. Without the treaties,
touché, Mick
there
Isham.
Would not be what is now known as Wisconsin.
Yeah. Glenn, I think it's the way I would say it is through the context of when the treaties were signed, essentially, we ceded lands. And, you know, being on a reservation, you look out, and all the lands around us are occupied. And, you know, we see the state constructs, like Mick was just alluding to, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, what have you. But the land is occupied. And that occupation is assigned to natives that the treaties are alive and well, because those were the agreements, the mutual agreements that we entered into, along with reserving, you know, rights that spoke to our way of life, not special rights that we're giving, the reservation of those types of abilities to do things that amounted to a good life for us. With that being said, treaties represent, you know, the foundation of mutual agreements that you should be able to live a good life in those lands that are ceded, and the mutual agreement and understanding that we should be able to live a good life within our homeland. So then all of a sudden, there's a mining project that is essentially mountaintop removal in the headwaters of our reservation, of our sovereign nation, essentially, that stand to, make a very dangerous situation from the perspective of surface water and groundwater aquifers.
What about the beauty of the Pinoki Hills? Mick Isham, Mike just used the phrase mountaintop removal. Would you equate that with the kind of mining that has permanently scarred so much of the Appalachian mountain range?
That's a great analogy. That's exactly what it was. And I had the opportunity, my son now, who was living in Ladysmith, now lives in Hurley. And so for his birthday, I traveled up there going right through 77, and it was just a gem, seeing everything I see. And then also knowing that now our brother the wolf is there again, and the pine marten is there again, and the elk is there again, knowing full well what could happen by removing that there. And that's extremely heartbreaking. And once that happens, it can never be the same again.
Mick, I want you to hold that thought. We're going to talk about Brother Wolf and the wolf hunt and the difference between the way Native American tribes view the earth and view the land as opposed to the Anglo settlers of Wisconsin when Route 51 continues. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Be careful if you're out on the road tonight. Freezing drizzle, changing to light snow, up to 2 inches, a low of 26. Those roadways could be hazardous. We've got 31 degrees right now outside our studio in Wausau. We've also got Mick Isham of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission and Mike Wiggins Jr. of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. We've been talking about mining and spearfishing, and let's talk about the wolf hunt, which is going forward in Wisconsin despite opposition from the tribes, which consider the wolf to be a sacred animal. At last year's hearing on the subject by the Natural Resources Board in Stevens Point, Bad River Tribal Elder Joe Rose spoke. He's a former educator at Northland College, and he told the creation story, the Chippewa creation story, about how man and wolf were partners on Earth from the very beginning.
It was both Anishinaabe and Muingan, man and wolf, that returned to get some Manado, the Great Spirit. And so man and wolf stood in the presence of Getsemanado. And so the Great Spirit spoke to both of them. In many ways, the two of you are alike. When you take a mate, it will be for life. Your social order will be very complex. And so Muingan was given the wolf pack. Anishinaabe was given the clan system. Both of you will make your living by the chase. Both of you will be excellent hunters. And then there were also prophecies. And if Anishinaabe passes out of existence, all other humans will soon follow. And so our destiny is related to the destiny of Muingan, the wolf, and that's just a part of our teachings.
That was Joe Rose at the DNR wolf hearings. Mike Wiggins, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, the wolf is definitely a sacred animal to Ojibwe people. And, one of the things that I do want to acknowledge is that in working with the DNR, we were able to essentially create and get the recognition that was due of essentially creating wolf sanctuaries within our respective reservations. We chose not to hunt them within the boundaries of our reservation. We worked and consulted with the DNR and essentially are in charge of managing our own wolf packs. And And I want to acknowledge that because that would have been a tremendous, you know, difference to try and negotiate if there would have been inroads trying to, you know, harvest wolves within our within the boundaries of our tribal boundaries.
Let's squeeze in one more phone call. We've got Norm in Oneida County. Norm, you're on Route 51.
Thank you. Good evening. I just want to point out, I want to ask you folks how you feel about the way this whole hunting season was pushed through by politicians and anti-wolf groups and all the different things that consist in there. I want you to know there are a lot of us out here that feel the same way you do, but we don't think our voices are being heard. And this whole thing was pushed through, as I say, by politics and by anti-wolf groups. And I was at that meeting in Stevens Point and spoke there also. But is there anything we can do to try to stop this mess?
Mick, Norm, are you listening on our new radio station, WHSF in Rhinelander?
No, I'm not. I'm listening.
You're listening to the Park Falls station?
Yes.
Mick Isham, comment on that, what Norm just said.
Well, you know, I think he raises a good point. You know, we talk about the tribes having this reverence for Mother Nature and the natural resources and being sacred and spiritual to us, but there's also a lot of non-Indians that hold those same values. And being that I went to Northland College and Joe Rose was my professor, I've seen a lot of them there. In fact, Sigurd Olson, the great Wisconsin conservationist, you know, the Sigurd Olson Institute is there. And so, but what can we do? I think the voting booth is one major thing. I see the same thing. I don't see, compromise. I don't see any people working together, and if they do, they get punished. That seems to be the new political way. Things getting kind of ramrodded through. And so, to me, the most powerful thing is to make sure we all get out there and vote.
Norm, we got to let you go. I'm sorry, because we're really running out of time. There are a couple of things that I really want to get to. Gordon Thayer quoted Chief Seattle, and he said that as you as a people view the entire earth and all of its waters as sacred, even the pebbles on the beach. Now, this seems to be an important part of Indian spiritual belief, this reverence for the land, the belief that everything is sacred. And it seems to me that it's somewhat different from the traditions of the Abrahamic religions, in which you have a god or a creator, a divine being, that's separate from the creation. Mick Isham, is this really a kind of an Indian way of looking at the world and the universe, that the creator and the creation are the same thing, and that therefore when you abuse the earth, you also are abusing God?
You know, I spoke a little bit about it before, about the way people's religions and spirituality are based on their way of life. And that's our way of life. You know, you talked about the Abrahamic religions. They kind of believe that they are above nature and they are the stewards and they're the managers of it. And we clearly, we believe we are just a small part of it, the whole web of life. We don't look at the woods and just see the trees. We see every single thing is connected. And if you harm one part of it, harm all of it. You are harming yourself. And we always would say that. You're dumping that pollution in that water. Well, now look at the way things are today. There is no part of the earth that is untouched because that pollution, it's in the air, it's in the water, it's in the ground, and then it's in us. And so,
Gentlemen, we're down to our last minute, and I meant to spend more time on this, but I didn't. I promised you we'd talk about the economic impact of the tribes. And, Mike, I'm going to go back to your Facebook page again. Gaming compact contributions, $65 million in Wisconsin. Charitable donations, almost $4 million. Purchases of goods and services, more than $545 million. State and federal payroll tax, $102 million. Total government and enterprise, more than $380 million. Total economic impact in Wisconsin, $1.097 billion of the tribes. And those are statistics that we don't hear very often.
No, they're not. And that $1 billion, instead of taking an example of mining and looking at the possibility of a $1.5 billion investment that might bring some jobs for 10 to 15 years, that $1 billion footprint as far as we can see right now, extends out into perpetuity because the tribes aren't going anywhere. And the tribes want a better life for, you know, their people. And as a byproduct of that, a better life is going to have to essentially manifest itself in being viable contributors to local economies and the municipalities around us. And there's a recognition of that and a desire to do just that.
Mike, I got to cut you off. Mick Isham, you got the final word, and unfortunately you've only got 15 seconds.
Well, I got to say that's just 1 year. When we were doing gaming compact negotiations in the past, Moose Spiros was the Department of Tourism director or secretary. He used the term, those dollars travel six times around before they leave the community. So, and this is just the direct services. That don't count the insurance that we give our employees and you know, the electric bills and all the other things that get paid through this. It's just huge, and perpetuity is the perfect word for it.
All right, we hear you. We want to thank our guests, Mike Wiggins, Jr., Chairman of the Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and Mick Isham, Lacouture Tribal Governing Board Secretary Treasurer and Chairman of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger, and thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, until next week, we're heading out of town. We'll